Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. There is a lot riding on the Chancellor this week as he prepares to deliver his second budget. Philip Hammond has already signalled that he may make use of some fiscal headroom as he seeks to tackle challenges on many different fronts, including confronting the UK's housing crisis. Hammond defended the government's record on housing to Andrew Marr, but conceded there was much more to be done.
Almost everybody agrees there is a housing crisis in this country. Sajid Javid was sitting in that chair a few weeks ago and he said, it is a real crisis. We need really big thinking on this. We need £50 billion of extra money to completely transform the housing situation. Then we can really build the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of homes this country needs. Have you turned him down?
Well, actually, you need to get on BBC iPlayer and check because he didn't mention that sum.
Okay.
That was mentioned in Parliament.
His people were briefing that all the time.
Afterwards. Yeah. Look, Sajid and I have been working very closely together with the Prime Minister. She said in Manchester in October that this is her number one priority. And the budget is our opportunity to set out how we're going to deliver on that priority, how we're going to make good on our pledge to the next generation that they should have the same opportunities that their parents' generation had. And it is not acceptable to us that so many fewer young Britons are able to own a home now than just 10 or 15 years ago. It is not acceptable to us that there are not enough properties available to rent and that rents are sky high. And the answer is we have to build more homes. We are delivering planning permissions at record numbers. Actually, we're delivering homes at record numbers. 217,000 in the last year reported this week. That's a dramatic increase
since 2010. I'm sorry, about the number of homes you'd like to achieve by the end of this Parliament.
The challenge here is affordability. And I think experts generally agree that to start to make inroads on the affordability problem, we've got to be sustainably delivering around 300,000 homes a year on average across the housing cycle. That's a big step up from where we are now. There is no single magic bullet, and it's certainly not just about pouring money in, because if you pour money in without fixing the other elements of supply, you will simply create more house price inflation. That makes the problem worse, not better.
However, while discussing the issue of driverless cars, which Hammond would like to see operating on British roads by 2021, the Chancellor made an unfortunate gaffe that has led to accusations that he is out of touch.
When it comes to robotics more generally, a lot of people say this is a bit like the first big recent wave of globalisation. Politicians, wealthy people told us it was all going to be great and it has destroyed jobs and hollowed out communities. Robotics will be the same. I mean, there's more than a million people driving for their living in this country. If the driverless revolution comes, most of them will lose their jobs, and it's not clear where the next lot of jobs are going to come from. People are really concerned about this.
So, Andrew, there's a simple choice here. Either we embrace change and we put ourselves at the forefront of it, or we try to hide from change and we allow ourselves to slip behind. We have to embrace change in this country, and we have to ensure that our people have the skills and the capability and the tools they need to be able to evolve, to learn new skills, to learn to take up new careers. I remember 20 years ago, we were worrying about what was going to happen to the million shorthand typists in Britain as the personal computer took over. Mm. Well, nobody has a shorthand typist these days. But where are all these unemployed people? There are no unemployed people because we've created 3.5 million new jobs since 2010.
There's 1.4 million unemployed people in this country.
Of course, unemployment is at record lows, lowest it's been since the 1970s. Mm. We've got a remarkable record of creating new jobs, and we're getting people into work at a remarkable rate, and that's something we should be extremely proud of.
It sounds like 1.4 million people who've been forgotten.
No, they haven't been forgotten by this government. We're focused on getting them into work. It was the last Labour government that abandoned the unemployed, ignored them, dumped them on welfare. We've reformed the welfare system to make sure that work always pays, to work with people, to upskill them, get them into work.
Meanwhile, the Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, has had his own questions to answer about the cost of Labour's nationalisation programme. Marr repeatedly asked him for a figure, but McDonnell refused to be drawn.
You have a very ambitious programme for more nationalisation of the railways, Royal Mail and the utilities. How much is that going to cost?
Right. What we've said, and this is very clear-cut, and I said it before, when you take them over...
I'm looking for a number,
OK, you don't need a number, because what you do is you swap shares for government bonds, and that is covered by the cost of those profitable industries we take over.
But government bonds is still government spending.
Yes, it is.
It's still borrowing.
And it will be Parliament who sets the price on any of those nationalisations. But what I'm saying is the cost is always covered because these are profitable industries and that will cover the cost of any borrowing.
That may be the case in due course, but right at the beginning the cost isn't covered. I'm saying again, how much will taxpayers have to spend to renationalise those
will,
things?
It's a will simple not, question. There will not be a burden on taxpayers. This price will be set by Parliament, government bonds will be issued, and any cost of government bonds will be covered by the income from those profitable industries. In fact, what we think, and it's not just us saying this,
it sounds a bit like a magic card trick, this.
Well, it isn't, because it's been done elsewhere, and it's been done being done across Europe as well now. You know, in Paris, water has been brought back into public ownership.
Right.
Why? Because people feel they're being ripped off by profiteers.
All of this, all your planning is based upon you invest a lot of money at the beginning, and as a result, the economy grows faster. And because the economy is growing faster, you get more taxes in and everything balances. By how much does the economy need to go for your plans to work?
Okay, let me just go through this, because people need to understand what we're saying, because a lot of figures have been bandied around.
I'm just looking for one figure.
I'll give you a figure.
All right.
What we're saying is we invest £250 billion over a 10-year programme, so about £25 billion a year. Mm-hmm. This is nothing untowards what past governments have done. In fact, if we don't do this, we're not keeping up with our competitors across Europe, US and elsewhere. That will bring in a return as you invest that money. And you know as well as
but
I
this
do.
This is eye-watering sums. This is £250 billion.
Over a 10-year period, this is what governments have done in the past and governments are doing across Europe. If we don't do that, we will not be able to keep up with our international competitors. And what that happens, you know as well as I do, when you invest those sums, look at what the recent report by PwC, you get a return on that investment that covers any cost of borrowing.
The Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, has expressed concern that while the devolved administrations in Scotland and Wales get their say over Brexit, there are no similar voices at the table for the north of England. He explained to Neil Paterson what he felt should be done about this.
Brexit remains the most divisive issue in British politics. There appears to be a role for the First Minister of Scotland, the First Minister of Wales in the talks, but no role for yourself.
I know, there's a committee with the Cayman Islands on it, the British Virgin Islands, but no permanent seat for the English regions, for Greater Manchester. And quite frankly, Neil, that's not good enough. I'm worried that we'll get the same old story, a London-centric approach to Brexit, where the government protects the City of London above other industries, and that's our fear. And to guard against that, we need a seat at the table.
I mean, you've written in the Sunday Times, and you essentially make the point that the Brexit happened because Westminster took its eye off the ball. You know, Westminster has failed at the north of England. Just explain that in a bit more detail.
Yeah, it's more than its eye off the ball, Neil. It's over decades. Westminster, in my view, has failed the north of England. It's given us a second-class transport system, a housing and homelessness crisis, an education system that obsesses on the university route and neglects those who want technical skills. And in the past, it focused on service industries and sold manufacturing down the river. So on many issues, you can see how Westminster hasn't come up with the solutions that the north of England needs. And now, with Brexit looming, finding solutions to those issues has become urgent. And that's why I'm making this a call today on the Chancellor to say now is the time to go further, faster, deeper with devolution. Give people real control, hand back power to the regions, and that's the best way to rise to the challenge of Brexit.
And finally, when asked by Sarah Smith about the UK's Brexit bill, Jacob Rees-Mogg outlined his proposal to maximise the government's leverage in negotiations with the EU.
Is this something else that might spark another war within the party if the Cabinet do start to suggest they're prepared to pay significantly more than Theresa May indicated in Florence?
The EU is saying they want us to settle the money first. That is their negotiating position. That is not Holy Writ. The government doesn't have to follow that, and they need our money. If we don't pay any money for the final 21 months of the multi-annual financial framework, the EU has about £20 billion, £18 to £20 billion gap in its finances. It has no legal authority to borrow, and that means either it's insolvent or the Germans and others have to pay more, or possibly some receive less. So our negotiating position on money is very strong, and we shouldn't fall into the trap of thinking just because Monsieur Barnier has said it, it is as if he has received tablets of stone like Moses. He hasn't.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and you can get a great deal on the magazine with the first 12 issues for just £12, plus a limited edition Spectator moleskin notebook. Just visit spectator.co.uk/pod offer. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.